So welcome to day 42 of our three-week Ango. Quite a wonderful thing, all of this coming and going, and our open house Ango. Please know that whether this is your first time or you've been coming a lot or you're here in residence, that each one who comes makes a difference. Your willingness to show up, your willingness to actively do nothing makes a difference that cannot be measured as we turn toward what is most true and most important. So we've been taking up this text of the four methods of bodhisattva guidance, and this morning began the second section, a kind speech. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. Wanted to talk a little bit this evening about arousing the mind of compassion. Because this is his first instruction about kind speech. So how do we do this? He says to rouse the mind of compassion. And this language to rouse the mind is quite traditional in Zen, and often we talk about rousing the bodhicitta, or rousing the heart-mind, rousing the way-seeking mind, that this is considered to be the first step to awakening, is to somehow to encounter the teaching, to encounter a question, to pick a book up off the shelf, to have a friend talk about it. But all of us, in some particular way, first heard of this Buddhist teaching. Maybe when we were very young, a number of people my age in college. But at some point, you heard. Now, many, many people have heard of Buddhism, or perhaps even heard of some of the basic teaching. But most people never come to a Zen center. Most people never take a step. And so this, perhaps we might say this unfolding of karma. For why did you hear it and turn toward it, and someone else hear it and just in one ear and out the other? But as we enter the way, we're encouraged to rouse this mind, this way-seeking mind, or arouse the energy of the heart. And this is quite something to do, because we can't, there isn't any formula like most of these teachings in Zen. It's all about pointing some direction. But over the past week, we've talked about intention. We've talked about what direction we're turning. And as Melissa said this morning, both she and I have been looking at Katagiri Roshi's commentary on the four methods of bodhisattva guidance. I believe it was from a retreat he led in the Minneapolis Zen Center, probably in the 70s or 80s. But it's quite a lovely commentary, and brings to mind for me how in Zen we talk so much about this being a practice beyond words and letters. And yet the number of words and the number of books that have been written about Zen, and then the books about the books, and then I think I'll probably write a commentary on Katagiri's commentary. But it is quite a wonderful thing, and those of us that love this path, once you get us started talking about it, it's hard to shut us up. Because we touch something, and all of us know this place to some degree. You touch something in order to get here today. If there was no connection between the synapse, the two parts of the nerve, then you would have stayed home and watched the basketball game. But here we are. Something pulls us. And so Katagiri quotes Dogen from another essay Dogen wrote called Gyoji, which is translated as continuous practice. Like most of Dogen's essays, I have not read it, but love the title. And of course, this is what we're doing here on Ango. This continuous practice. We have formal sitting and walking practice, we have meal practice, we have sleep practice. And of course, this is our life. Whether you're in residence here or not, our life is nothing but our life. And our life is practice. And as we consciously turn toward that, accept that, there is some possibility. But in this essay, Dogen says, the arousing mind, practice, awakening, and nirvana are all going in circles without stopping at all, without cutting off at all. The arousing mind, practice, awakening, and nirvana are all going in circles without stopping at all, without cutting off at all. So the arousing mind, this arousing the desire or arousing the longing, arousing some kind of energy to break out of the habit force of just one more day, one more Sunday, one more round of Zazen. So we have to somehow rouse this to find it. I think for me, each human being has this. This is part of all human beings, whether we know it or not. All of us are looking for something. All of us searching for a life that has purpose. All of us searching for some way to make it through the day. I don't think the squirrels have this exact same thing we do. It seems peculiar to the human animal. In fact, I'm reminded of Walt Whitman has a lovely passage about cows and how he envies the cows in the field because not one of them is concerned that their neighbor has something they don't have or is offended by the burping of the cow next to them. But we humans do. We are disturbed mammals. There is something in us that will not let us just chew our cud, even if we long to just do that. It's not enough, or it doesn't last, or comes and goes. So this arousing mind, this is this comes, and then there is practice. And so we practice at home, practice with our children, with our friends. We practice here in the Zendo. And then there is awakening. Awakening is a word that has probably caused more suffering than almost any word in the human language, especially among us Zen people. come because we have some idea of what it is, and we so want it, and we so think it is what we think it is. And yet this, again, this disturbing is part of the path. Without being disturbed, we would not come here. One lovely poet in the Jewish tradition talks about, he says, God disturbs us toward our destiny. God disturbs us toward our destiny. We might say the Dharma disturbs us toward our true life. But awakening is not a thing, is not simply an experience, but awakening is any moment that we turn toward the truth. Awakening is the moment where we realize that we've been daydreaming and we come back to our breath. That is awakening. Awakening is when we look beside the brick walkway and see the blue flowers. When we take a spoonful of delicious soup and put it in our mouth and say, ah, tastes good. Awakening also has many forms, sometimes quite wonderful, where the heart breaks open. And suddenly all of these wild Zen teachings are so clear and to the point and not a metaphor at all. And we see self and other, such a sweet joke that the universe has played on us. And we dissolve into tears or laughter, maybe speechless. But all of this is temporary. So maybe we should say before awakening, temporary awakening. Because it does not fixate, we do not fixate. And in discussing this line, Katagiri, it's quite wonderful in that he talks about nirvana, which is usually translated as cessation. He talks about nirvana as coming back to being human. So we arouse the mind, we practice, we awaken, and then we return. And then we are temporary, me temporary David, once more. This circle, so nirvana, not cessation, but maybe full participation. He says this: these are going in circles without stopping. Reminded me of that image Julie mentioned last night of the Christian Godhead, of the three aspects of the Godhead sort of pouring into each other. So we could say these aspects of our life on the path, arousing the way-seeking mind, practice, awakening and nirvana, opening and closing, intending once more to sit down, following breath after breath, returning to just letting things be, some opening, the opening comes, the opening goes, oh, still the same old me, rousing, and so continuously. Just like the daffodils outside are opening so slowly, you walk by and you can't tell they're moving. But yet twice a day we go out and we can see, oh my goodness, those little fellas are opening, inexorably opening, not still at all. So in our experience, we catch a mind moment, a temporary mind moment, and we think it is fixed, or we want it to be fixed, or we desperately hope it's not fixed. And then something else comes. So this rousing the self, this rousing. And so in this case, rousing the mind of compassion. From one side, we can say compassion is being kind to other people. But I think rousing this mind of compassion, just as in the giving Dogen, is encouraging us to go beyond the idea of me, the gift, and you. This rousing the mind of compassion rousing some innate quality. And this quality arises as we begin to see no difference between me and you. Any one person suffering is my suffering. This whole world is not something that exists outside of me. But as Uchiyama Roshi says, everything we encounter is ourself. So we encounter ourself in one person after the other, in one daffodil after the other. In one mind state after the other. And this seeing the arising, seeing the non-separation, tasting it, allows us then to open the field of ourself, as one sutra says, to not judge by any standards. Each thing is what it is. Each mind state is what it is. And in this mind of compassion, no need to help in that way. No need to change, but first some sense of identity, of appreciation. And from that inner work, then naturally, we know what to do. We bow and we say, thank you. So let's go around and say our names.
And please make yourselves comfortable. I'm Melissa.
Todd.
I'm Fran.
Michael.
Ed.
Matt.
Steve.
Corn.
Nathan.
Jamie.
Aaron.
Diane.
Steve.
Julie.
Blake.
Faye.
Willie.
James.
Jesse.
David.
Melissa.
No, oh, I didn't start.
You tricked me.
So, welcome questions, observations, things that resonated with you from the talk, from the reading.
I like this reading tonight because, in my experience, it's kind speech is overlooked a lot. It's sort of like so ordinary, it's like salt. And people, you know, just, what's that? I don't have to do it. You know, it doesn't seem very Zen-like, you know, but has such great, like it says in this thing, the repercussions are amazing. You know, it's sort of fans out fast.
Yeah, that was my sense when I first read through this, and kind speech, because it sounds like, yeah, just being nice. And we were talking this morning about how much more, in a sense, how different than just trying to please people. It's some real practice here.
And I think, you know, we touched on this morning too, but it seems something really worth kind of digging into, which is, you know, the desire to please, the kind of speech that is considered to be pleasing speech, and the amount of courage it takes to, you know, really engage in speech that is your authentic self, which comes from a place of kindness, which sometimes, you know, maybe people don't want to hear that, really, you know, and you know, I think it takes a lot of practice to be able to do that without really getting into a bit of a reality war, because the person to whom you're speaking, where you're trying to be authentic and present yourself, you know, maybe they're, you know, it's uncomfortable for them, and so they shut down, and then your reaction is to shut down. So, I mean, it's quite a calling from Dogen for us to consider this part of our practice, like an essential part of our practice, is to to be willing to show up, no matter what the consequences.
Yeah, I like you're connecting this to showing up. Because we've been talking about generosity for the first week of the ongoing, and moving into kind speech as another version of generosity. You know, and that, and he's so specific, Dogen, in the beginning, where he says it's not about currying favor, rather than being nice, trying to get people to like you. It's not that. It's about. But this, I think you're pointing to something underneath all of this, which is really about when we rouse the mind of compassion. We not only connect to another person, which is what we were talking about today, but we actually come forth to connect to that person. It's an active thing. It's not just, you know, grooving on being connected.
Because it opens up a pathway to be kind during that time in a way I hadn't felt before. And it doesn't mean something's wrong. And as I reflected on my life, it is the disturbances, even though I'm not so happy when they show up, that have brought me more to who I truly am. And the recent disturbance was being away from here for a while, and I wanted to be here. And it's brought me to a deeper level of wanting to have that place in my heart wherever I go.
Yeah, there's something about being disturbed that creates possibility. That usually we're pretty okay. I mean, we think we know what things are, things, you know, how they are. And as long as reality comes somewhere near that, we can shoehorn it in, right? But then it gets to the point where it just doesn't fit anymore. And that's the blessing of the breaking what was encasing us, that we thought was our protection, but is actually what has kept us from receiving what is here.
I wanted to go back to what Willie said, as far as the that it almost being too casual, and I think it really made me think about, so if I think of myself as a kind person, then I almost have this subconscious assumption that kind speech will arise. But not so. I mean, if I think about, you know, my moments of frustration during the day today with my own children, and think about, why did I say that way? You know, I've been confused before. I know what it's like to be confused. Why wasn't I generous in my response to them when they were confused? And I love them, and I'm a good father, and I'm kind to them, but that doesn't automatically mean my speech was kind. And then that got me thinking about that, well, it's, you know, it's not just a joke, this separation of others. It's a cruel joke, because that's all that is,
yeah,
right there.
It's a cruel joke.
Although we've been saying that your inner dialogue toward yourself is probably much worse than anything you say to your children.
Yeah. Once I realize what I've done.
Yeah. Oh, rats!
Yeah. But if I, you know, it's really that breaking down the illusion of separation that brings up the realization that that wasn't kind speech.
Yeah.
Right.
And thinking of ourselves as kind people is a real liability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and many of us sitting in this room really value the fact that we're generally kind people.
Right.
And so that, one, that then becomes something we have to defend. What do you mean you don't think I'm kind? You know, right? And then it's the filter that everything, well, I guess that must be kind, even though it, you know. So how do we let go of that level to explore something more? So appreciate you bringing that up.
I've been practicing this week with a cold, which is interesting because habitually the breath is the easy thing to go back to, but when the breath isn't easy, I don't have that to go back to. And therefore, sort of the basis, the foundation, the sense that I'm a kind person, all of that is kind of pushed around and not working. So it was a real interesting week because that wasn't there.
It's a great example of a disturbance. Because you get this sense, I know what my practice is. My practice is breath practice.
Exactly.
And no matter what happens, but no. Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
I've been thinking a lot recently about sort of the art of speech, and I guess it was on Friday I participated in like a spoken word circle. So it was like free association. You have to speak like as fast as you can, and it was just like the most formal thing I've done in a really long time. And it was really like, how can I put a word to what I'm feeling and not obscure what I'm feeling to not feel vulnerable? And in a sense, it was very much like a right speech. And of course, in Zen, there's a lot of, you know, the art of language and pointing at things and also not taking the face value of the words. Like language can be a very vulnerable and I think like artistic way. Yeah.
Mm. Well, and I think you point to that aspect of, so there's the content or some literal thing, but there's also something else going on, and some words, just like when in these Dharma dialogues somebody can say a word or two that catch you, there's something in it that goes beyond the meaning or touches some meaning in you, and such a powerful medium.
I'm responding to something that David said. True kindness is active and present and doesn't have anything to do with being a kind person at all. It's you're too close and too intimate, and then, you know, it's gone. You moved on. It doesn't stick to you or anything else. It has to do with interaction, not with, you know, seeing yourself a certain way, or because you could say something sharp that could be kind to somebody. It doesn't have anything to do with that. Being nice.
Yeah. Well said. Thank you.
James, and then Steve, and then Nat.
I think
the other Steve. Yeah. Steve is confused. Steve is so confused. That's Steve.
That was Steve. I think the dog points us to something fundamental, right? That, you know, over the course of a lifetime, we all learn how to pretend like we have our shit together. And really project this sort of competence, or at least it sort of reminds me of, you know, like when kids are doing skateboard tricks and it sort of gets out of control, but they land anyway, and they're like, I meant to do that. Right? But we're doing that all the time, right? Like every second of the day. Oh, I meant to do that. And you know, when we sort of like what Faye was pointing to, this sort of fundamental vulnerability, this sort of undeniable vulnerability that is just true about me, about all of us, then all that's left is kindness. It's the only response that you can give. From this other place where we've got our shit together, it doesn't flow quite so smoothly.
So I was really appreciating how you talked about this awakening as maybe not exactly what you might think it is, and part of a cycle, you know, and temporary thing that has to be brought out over and over again. And when you were asking the question about, you know, how do we rouse this compassionate mind, and you know, why is it that some people end up coming to Zen centers and other people don't? And this cycle of categories, it kind of seems to me that there might be a piece missing, this, you know, this disturbance, this suffering, you know, that, like the beginning of the Four Noble Truths, is really, you know, that gives the initial impulse, you know, that then from there we can kind of rouse, you know, we can, you know, notice this way-seeking mind initially, and from there we can kind of nurture it, but without that disturbance, that suffering, would any of us have come here? And it seems like it would kind of flow nicely in between the nirvana and then back to the seeking again. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
A piece missing there.
I think so.
I want to
make a motion.
I just would stay there. But then it doesn't work like that, you know. You get to the nirvana part, and then isn't there something about the devas or something? They live in this heavenly realm, and there's no need to practice there, and eventually it sort of decays on its own, you know. And it's only when you come back to the human realm that there's that impetus to, you know, to seek the way again, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's so true, and I think that's what Katagiri was trying to say when he talked about nirvana being the human realm. But I think it's so important to make that explicit. This noble truth of suffering. Buddha didn't say, well, the first thing that sucks about life is that we suffer. There is something in that disturbance, in that suffering. Yeah, without that. And if we didn't know what was going on, yeah, we wouldn't. Couldn't rouse anything. No. Thank you. Nat?
Jesse.
Oh, yeah. all through your talk, and while we're reading the this section. First of all, this section reminds me of the Christian, I think it's the Epistle of James, where it has a whole section on taming the tongue and the importance of that. And it just brought me back to this past year. Had a very toxic relationship with an employee of mine, which started with, when it started going bad for me, I started like, oh, let's be compassionate. Why is this person like this? And eventually that was just sucked out of me. It was just gone. And it was very much like putting two betta fishes in a tank and seeing what happened. It got really bad. Like, I almost had to leave my job. The only reason I didn't leave my job is because this person left the job. And basically it just became a daily practice of not getting into a verbal fight with this person in order to keep peace within my department. And that was, it was just, that was the practice for several months, this person. And it wasn't for me, like somebody had said, kind speech doesn't necessarily mean coming from a place of kindness. It was just what it had to do to diffuse potential violence. Not true violence, but like verbal altercations with this person. So that's just what came up for me throughout the reading and the discussion. So,
well, I think you point to how do we work with where we are? So what does this mean in the situation where every day you've got to be with somebody who drives you crazy and you drive them crazy, and sometimes just not going off on them is a kind of kind speech. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Yeah? Did you want to say something?
No, it was literally Jesse had his hand up, and you guys couldn't see him, so I was raising my hand.
So you were taking care of Jesse.
It's helping us.
Taking care of your peripheral vision.
Thank you, Dad.
Is that an example of speech? We think so.
I'm a kind person.
Well, let's do some walking.